thanks for choosing Felger and Maz to entertain.
My nickname is Gloom.
And inform you in the afternoon.
The people who like licorice really like licorice.
98.5, the Sports Hub.
Fully loaded, a big, fat reentry Monday. How you doing, Maz?
Good, you?
Peachy, thank you so much. Big Jim Murray, who filled in admirably in the a-hole chair.
Oh, thanks.
Last week, joins us from the update studio, and we'll just get right to it, Maz. So for me, it's a massive one. I was gone for over a week out of the country for a lot of it, so it's I got to catch up on a ton of stuff. You caught the end of last week, so you got to help me through today, okay?
Yeah, we both will. Murray will help us both. Who are you kidding?
Okay, so anyway, I think we have to start with Patriots and continuing with our thoughts on their offseason. And again, just sort of picking up from last week as well, really in totality. Chris Gasper writes today in the Boston Globe that it's too early. It is too early to judge Patriots offseason. Do you agree or disagree that it's too early to judge the Patriots offseason?
I disagree.
I disagree as well.
Vehemently.
Yeah, look, again, ask me in 3 weeks if there are more moves, I'll change my mind. I mean, but my job is to give you a day-to-day snapshot, and I'm telling you right now, I think their offseason has sucked.
Well, no, look, is it too early to judge what kind of team they're going to be in 2018? Fine. Yes. It's too early to judge what kind of season they're going to have, because we haven't seen the draft, and certainly there might be more moves to come, and you can, you know, like, we're even focused on them, we're not even focused on the division or the competition yet. So, like, I'll get to the season in a little bit. If I'm grading the off season a week in, it sucked.
Of course it sucked.
It sucked.
Of course it has sucked.
How can you not judge their off season?
When I think the second, most people would agree, I think the second most important, if not the most important, in-house matter of business they had to take care of was getting Nate Solder back, and he's not there, and your left tackle is now one big fat question mark. Yeah, it's you can judge it, and it's not good for the team right now.
I was angry on Friday, Murray, wasn't I?
You were. Came in hot.
I was angry. I don't know why I was angry, but I was angry.
Let's hear it. Reset your
so
anger.
So I'm still some. Angry.
I'd like to hear it.
No, it's not going to necessarily manifest itself the same way, but here's the way I look at it, all things being considered. Net negative. Net negative. What went out is better than what came in. What is gray about that? There's nothing gray about that. What went out is better than what has come in. End of story. So all of a sudden, like, what cracks me up is that all of a sudden, players that we always thought were garbage are now somehow seem to be good just because of their bodies and because the Patriots got them. So Danny Shelton, none of us had ever even heard of the freaking guy until they got him. Now all of a sudden, it's a guy who's going to be an anchor in the middle of their defensive line.
Well, the draft nerds heard of him.
Okay, Jeremy Hill? Oh, yeah, they got Jeremy Hill from the as far as I know, the first three guys you got were two Browns and a Bengal. I heard that and went, well, that's great. You're picking up trash off of suck teams. Like, that's what it feels like. Now, look, maybe McCourty can play. I don't know. I know his brother's a good player. I don't know if he is. He's now changed teams a couple of times in the last couple of years. So we'll see how that one shakes out. And you want to tell me that, what about Claiborne? He came from a good team in the Falcons. Had six of his sacks in one game. One game. Didn't we use a crap on people like Chandler Jones for pulling that sort of junk? Or Jarvis Green when he used to pull that sort of crap and get three sacks in one game and then you didn't hear from him for 6 weeks? So again, the only way I can, let alone Cordarrelle Patterson, who to me now is getting like some sort of royalty treatment. Why? I don't know. He sucks as a receiver. Return guys don't mean anything anymore. So why should I get geeked up about that one?
Like, I hate the Cordero Patterson move.
So I look at the whole thing, and again, net negative. Who would you rather have, Deion Lewis or Jeremy Hill?
Oh, Deion Lewis.
Who would you rather have, Cordero Patterson or Danny Amendola?
Danny Amendola.
Not even close.
It isn't even close. So again, what went out is better than what has come in. Fact.
Yeah, I mean, where they got these guys from isn't going to bother me as much. You got Corey Dillon from the Bengals. You got Jabal Sheard from the Browns. I mean, that can sometimes work out just because they were in some hellhole. But he's right. Like, what they've brought in, it doesn't match what you just lost. And the Nate Solder thing, I know the money was ridiculous. But still, I think right now, that money would have been worth it, because what are you going to do at left tackle? If you draft someone, it's not going to be as good as Solder. Are you going to move Marcus Cannon over? You have these other guys like Leandro and Waddle sound like they have a foot out the door because they're meeting with the Dallas Cowboys. They screwed that one up.
Okay, so here are my two takeaways. And the Solder thing I saw coming before I went away
over
a week
right.
ago. I said, this doesn't look right to me. He's gone. And so I wasn't necessarily surprised by that. But that relates to my second take. The first, I'll just give you my Cordarrelle Patterson thought. I don't care about the giveaway, what they gave up. They moved down from the fifth to the sixth.
Like 10 spots or something. Okay. It's not that much.
Who cares? I don't care about that. I don't care. You know he's on the books for 3.25?
Yes, he's a good chunk of change on top of it.
3.25, which is not guaranteed. So I don't think the money's guaranteed until he makes the opening day roster. So if he makes the week one roster, then that becomes guaranteed because he's a vested veteran. So the money's not guaranteed until that point. And if they cut him before that point, fine. I'll take it all back. Because, again, I don't care moving 10 spots down from the 5th to the 6th. It means nothing to me. But if this cat ends up taking $3.25 million off your cap for what? For what? For what? To return kicks? You've got to be kidding.
One kick off a game, maybe? Two?
And the guy is a great kick returner. He's a good kick returner. No, he's a great kick returner.
Position's irrelevant now.
In fact, do you know that he's the second by return average, the second leading kick returner in NFL history? In terms of average kickoff return, it's Gale Sayers, one, and Cordero Patterson, two.
I didn't know that.
I think he's led the league in kickoff return average in three of the last 5 years. He's been all-pro at kick returner, which means not Pro Bowl, all-pro, the best in the league. So he's the best kick returner of this generation, call it, and one of the best of all time. I'll give it to you. He's one of the best kick returners of all time, second to Gale Sayers. You know how many kick returns he had last year?
Seven.
No, it was low.
19.
Yeah, one a week.
19. Do you know how easy it is to neutralize a kick returner?
In fact, I looked at it as a team. I think the Raiders had 34.
I don't care about that number. I care about...
But my point is, as a team, you're going to get two a game.
My point is, if Gale Sayers is back there returning kicks, do you know what you do?
You kick it out of the end zone.
Do you know when the Patriots played the Raiders? Do you know what the Patriots did when they faced Cordell Patterson?
They kept kicking it out of the end zone.
Six touchbacks. Six. The Patriots didn't let him touch the ball, which is what you do when you have Gale Sayers back there, and they now let you kick it off from the 50 or wherever it is you're kicking the ball off from. You blow it out of the back of the end zone, and you never hear from the guy. So you're going to pay $3.25 for... It was hysterical. I looked at Patterson's game log. He had a bunch of kick returns earlier in the year. I don't have it in front of me. But he had, kick return. Then he got to the Patriots. And because the Patriots have half a brain, they said, okay, we'll just kick it out of the back of the end zone. There's no use kicking it to this guy. He's good. They kicked it out of the back of the end zone six times. He never returned the ball once. And then after that, the last eight games of the year, he got almost no returns. He got returns only three of the last eight games. There's only one team that kicked to him, the Cowboys, because they're stupid, because I guess they don't look at tape or they just don't bother. I think he had four returns against the Cowboys. No one else let him return the ball, because it's really not that hard to figure out. So I could give two poops that he's the second best kick returner ever. He's the best kick returner in the league. Neat.
Oh, you know you're going to hear, though. Oh, well, they can use him on jet sweeps, and he's a deep threat because of his speed. He sucks as a wide receiver.
Yeah, he's a gunner, too, Murray. He's a gunner.
So, 3.25 if he makes the team. Amendola got $8 million guaranteed over 2 years in Miami. I don't know how it's totally structured. That's all the reports.
Well, $8.25 million was the one that's guaranteed.
Right. $8.25 million spread over 2 years. So, it's four something guaranteed a year if you want to look at it that way. For a guy who I'll take on special teams over Cordell Patterson anyway. I don't care about the stupid kick returns.
No, I care about the punt returns.
I care about a guy who knows when to fair catch and is sure-handed back there. And, like, I think a punt returner to me is I want a punt returner 10 times more than I want a kick returner. I know Bethel Johnson was a good kick returner. Who cares about the kick? Hang on to the ball and keep your mouth shut is what I would say to my kick returner. So, Dan, I want Danny Amendola on special teams before Patterson anyway because he's a punt returner. But do you understand how important Danny Amendola has been in these big games?
Mm-hmm.
Let me give you his last four playoff games. Last four playoff games. Super Bowl against Atlanta. 8 catches on 11 targets. Touchdown in the fourth quarter. It wasn't the game winner. It was the one before the game winner, right?
And he had a 2-point conversion, too.
Or the game tire. Then Tennessee. Again, not that he was instrumental to it, but 11 catches on 13 targets. Against Jacksonville. He was giant balls on the table. Giant. 7 catches on 9 targets, 2 touchdowns, including a third down conversion on 3rd and a billion when you were, on
3rd and 18, I think it was.
3rd and 18 coming out of your own end. That was Amendola. And then in the Super Bowl, you showed up again. 8 catches on 11 targets. Remember the game you almost lost at home in the playoffs to Baltimore a couple years ago? 5 catches, 6 targets, 2 touchdowns. So when the crap is hitting the fan and Brady needs it, he goes to Amendola, and Amendola's there, and he's been there. He's helped you win huge games, huge plays in big games. That's what I want. That's what I want. $4 million for Amendola this year, or three for Patterson? Is it like even like that? I think I hate that trade-off. Patterson's just the kind of receiver that I hate.
34 catches in his last four postseason games total.
Amendola has 6 touchdowns and 12 career postseason games for the Patriots. And this is a guy, so maybe you don't really relate to Danny Amendola because he's not on your fantasy team. Because he's not, he doesn't really show up in the regular season, or he's hurt, or, you know, you go weeks without really seeing him. And so, not a factor to you, because you didn't, I don't know how many points he got in your PPR league. But I know if you actually watch the games and the big ones, and when Brady needs it, who does he look for? Does he look for the guy who runs a million miles an hour, who's flying 40 yards down the field with his hand in the air? Or does he look for Troy Brown or Wes Welker or Danny Amendola or Julian Edelman or some, or Deion Branch, or someone who just gets open and catches the ball? And so you've lost that for Cordarrelle Patterson? Oh, I hate that trade-off. Can you tell? I hate that trade-off.
Didn't notice.
Here's the other thing, real quick.
Yeah.
And this was just from afar, as I watched a transaction wire. Deion Lewis gone, Danny Amendola gone, Nate Solder gone,
Malcolm Butler
gone. Okay. And I look around the league, I'm saying, like, why do I have to keep hearing from all the Patriots toadies about their salary cap management? Because it feels to me, from 10,000 feet, and that's how far away I was, but it feels to me, like everyone else, they lose their good players. Like everybody else. And I'm not blaming them for it. You can't pay everybody. Whether it's the salary cap, like you believe, whether it's real money, like I believe, whether whatever the case is. In the NFL, if you draft well and have success, you can't keep them all. That's just, that works, that's the way it is for everybody. Why around here do we get sold a bill of goods like it's different here? Why? Why are we told that somehow they have this magical cap formula that allows them to do what other teams can't? The only thing they do that other teams can't is win every year. But is that because of Belichick and Brady? Or is that because of this forcocked salary cap management?
Because of the coach and the quarterback.
What? But just
not necessarily in that order.
Just look at the roster movement and the players they lose. Like everybody, and I have to be told this over and over again whenever a team spent. Oh, the Broncos, stupid. Look at the Ravens, they had to lose all their players, stupid. When I look at you, I see the exact same thing. You can't keep your good players either. So whether it's a collusion, salary cap, hard cap, soft cap, cash cap, which is what I think it is, and it's all the same. It's no different. How have you been able to keep your good players over any other team? You haven't. You know what the difference is? You're left with Belichick and Brady. Where the Ravens are left with Flacco and Harbaugh, and the Broncos are left with nobody at quarterback and a coach that retires.
Case Keenum.
Or the Jets are left with not, you know, like, but the teams that have to, shed salary and lose their players? How are you any different? How are you any different? Do you know how much talent's walked out the door in the last couple of years?
Cause, yep.
Because they can't or didn't want to pay them?
Yeah, I'm totally aware of that.
You put that list together, it's pretty jarring.
And these are, you know, some of them they were going to let go for other reasons, and you replaced other ones. But I'm just like, all these guys, if it wasn't for money, they would have kept Danny Amendola, Nate Solder, Deion Lewis, Malcolm Butler, Jimmy Garoppolo, Martellus Bennett, Chris Long, Jabal Sheard, Darrell Revis, Akeem Hicks, Jamie Collins, Logan Ryan, Aqib Talib, Chandler Jones, Wes Welker, Shane Vereen, even little Danny Woodhead, like at the time, got priced out of here on his little scale, on his little mini Danny Woodhead scale, got priced out. So it's like, you lose good players like everybody else. Don't buy this crap about someone. They have some sort of magical accounting formula or payroll formula down there that allows them to keep their good. No. They keep Belichick and Brady. And so Belichick's so damn good, anyone else sucks in your division, that it's men against boys half the time. And then even when it's not, just hand the ball to Brady with 4 minutes left and you win anyway. So quit pretending like they have some sort of, you know, valuation scheme or system that's better or different than anyone else. They lose players like everybody else. And it would all count. I'll shut up now. It would all be fine if they let all those players walk out the door and then they turned around and kept Garoppolo. And then you would say, well, now they do have the formula. They did have a plan where they managed their money properly. And it came to a point where they needed all that money and they used it. And they kept the future. And now you have Garoppolo, and their smart cap management allowed them to keep Garoppolo. And then I would say, fine, let them all go. But instead they let them all go and they lost Garoppolo. So how are they any different? They're different because of Belichick and Brady. They're not just different because of their salary cap.
And the quarterback might not be playing ball with them on contracts anymore.
So there's that. All right. It's a reentry Monday. We'll pick it from there with your calls right after this.
This is Felger and Mass
on 98.5
The Sports Hub. Felger and Maz.
They're more scared of you than you are of them.
98.5. The Sports Hub.
What do you do with good kick returners now?
Nothing.
It's never been easier. It's never been easier to avoid a good kick returner than it is right now with where they kick off from. I mean, again, he was returning kicks at a good clip for much of the year. And then he got to New England in week 10. I said it was week 8. It was week 10. So up until that point, he had 4, 5, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, looked like 13, if I'm counting that correctly. Looked like he had 13 kick returns through the first 9 weeks. 13. He was allowed to return the ball 13 times. He got to New England, 0. They kicked it out of the back of the end zone 6 times. Wouldn't let him touch the ball. Durr. Boy, it just shows you how dumb the league is. That it takes the Patriots to look at a guy who has the second best kick return average in the history of the game. The second best kick return average since Gale Sayers. And to say to themselves, oh, well, why don't we just not kick to him? Oh, can you imagine how much time they had to spend on that? Like half a second.
Okay, but if the rest of the... And I'm playing devil's advocate here.
But the rest of the league can't figure that out?
Can they figure out anything?
No.
Okay, so the rest of the league is stupid. So Bill knows that. But that is... Because honestly, I think this signing is way overplayed. But here's the other thing. Let's say they do kick it to him. Let's say they do. How many times a game is he really going to see it?
What do you mean?
How many times is he really going to... What do you have, 2 returns a game, max?
Well, so...
I know there's a big place, potentially, but max? And since when do they need a kick returner when they get a quarterback who can make up the yardage on the next play anyway?
Oh, do I not give a crap about their kick returns? I just think it's, you know, they say hitting yardage, but Maz makes a good point. What if you start the 25 and Brady throws a little out to Edelman for 8 yards and the next thing, there's your kick return. There's your kick return.
Brady has made it up for him always. They don't care where they start half the time because Brady makes up the yardage.
And if you want to tell me your kick returner costs you nothing, great, fine. Great. That's what he should. Your kick returner on this team should cost you nothing. Not 3.25. Again, he had 11 returns through the first 9 weeks because teams kicked it to him. Then he got to New England. And New England was the first team that did not let him return a kick. Okay. And then the rest of the league said, you mean we don't have to kick to him? And from there, the last 7 weeks of the year, he had 0 returns against New England, run return the next week, then went the next 2 weeks with no returns, and then Dallas, of course, who has no clue, let him return the ball 4 times for 103 yards for a 26-yard average. Then after that, he went back to 0-1 for the rest of the year. It's like, oh, God. So, I don't know, maybe the AFC East is still that dumb that they'll continue to kick to the guy.
They are.
Anyway, reentry Monday, we came in there. Your thoughts, Patriots offseason. James in California, lead us off.
Hey, Velger, nice to have you back. I'm just curious, what do you think of the Patriots trading up to draft the QB early in the draft? And what do you think of them maybe starting Colin Kaepernick to be the heir apparent?
Okay, Maz, how do you feel about them trading up in the first for a quarterback?
No, absolutely not. 0. No. Stay right. Like, the other thing is, at this stage, you'd have to get up to what? Number 3 to get a guy? Like, because you're going to get 3 guys going out of the top 3 spots at this stage anyway. No, they've already whiffed on that. Stay where you are. If a guy falls into your lap in the late second or the third, fine. I told you I would do that. I'm not moving up. No chance.
So one of the benefits of having Bill Belichick is that you don't have to move up to draft your quarterback. He can take 2 equal players and get more out of this. Because I do believe that. I mean, if the players are equal, I think where they've misstepped on the draft is trading down too far and thinking that 70 is the same as 35. You know, it's not. But if there's 2 quarterbacks that both project in the range of the 30s or the 40s, so they don't have to trade up to do that. So that's a benefit. And so I'm not trading up either. Jim Murray, you still want Johnny Manziel? And if you want Johnny Manziel, do you want Colin Kaepernick?
Yeah, sure. Why not? There's talent there. If they come cheap, why not? I mean, it's a better option than Brian Hoyer, and you need to have some youth going forward. But I still don't want them drafting a quarterback. I don't. And moving up for one? Hell no.
No, I would take, I told you, I would take one in the middle rounds. I think they got, 2 seconds or 2/3, whatever it is. Like, you can take a guy in there, fine, no problem.
Mike and Peabody, go ahead, Mike.
I think Bill Belichick has been drunk over the past 2 off seasons. He is borderline reckless. It's scary, honest to God. And what was Cordarrelle Patterson, like, Jad Jackson 2.0? I mean, for God's sakes. I mean, it is so infuriating being a Patriots fan when it comes to the off season. It's like, he does all these things that, you know, we all have serious questions about as fans, And I know none of our opinion matters, but, you know, you just never get anything out of the guy. And it's like, dude, don't you think you should figure out your own house with Tom Brady's issues and Rob Gronkowski's issues before you go out there and start snorting and grunting at, you know, all these different pro days?
I just don't want to hear how the Patriots somehow have this cap management thing that allows them to keep their good players where other teams can't. They lose their good players like everybody else. That's it. I don't want to hear about how they're somehow different here and they can keep guys, or that because Brady takes less, they can keep guys. Who have they been able to keep because Brady's taken less?
Okay, so the other angle I threw out at this on Friday was that how come they've been able to get some of these guys to play ball in other years and now they can't? How come Amendola wouldn't take less? How come Brady hasn't redone his deal yet? How come Solder didn't take less? Why wouldn't Solder do it? Solder took a 2-year deal the last time. How come this time with a kid who needs good care, and you know, hopefully the kid's doing fine. Okay, my understanding is he is, but why wouldn't you want to stay in Boston? All things being equal.
So answer your question.
I think something's going on down there. Some of these guys threw up their hands finally and said, you know what, I'm done with this now. I'm ready to move on. And it might be in tandem with the rings they've won, or, you know, I've won, so now I want my money, or because they've made past sacrifices like Amendola. Maybe it is something like that. But I think that this whole notion that things were wrong internally there, I think is very real, and I think some guys just said, you know what, I don't want to be here anymore.
So Amendola, to me, would be the one that would really stand out. Because to get close to Nate Solder's money, man, you really have to extend yourself. You put yourself in a bad position. You had no leverage against Nate Solder, and so he's the highest paid lineman in the history of the game, and that's real money, man. So, like, that's a hard ask for the Pats to get to 90% of that. To get to 90, 80% of Danny Amendola, you should be able to do. That's a guy that I would have extended for, is Amendola. I just think he's been so big in so many big games, and it's been so crucial to your success when you've needed it most. And I want to say it's relatively short money. I know it's 2 years for 12. He's not going to get all 12. They never do. The guarantee is 8. 2 years for a guarantee of 8. I think he's worth that. And it drives me nuts to hear that some kick returner is going to get 3.25 if he makes the team.
See, I just feel like in the past, the Patriots have decided who stays and who goes. And I don't think they're making the decision anymore. I think the players are making some of the decisions now.
It's hard to argue that. And Amendola's the one. Talk about the guy that's always taken the, you said Solder did. Amendola's always taken the discount. You know, his career was made here playing next to Tom Brady. You know, they're boys. And he left? Right, so maybe that is the warning sign.
Stay tuned for more Felger and Mass on 98.5 The Sports Hub.
I like Andy Kupadukabu. Stupid. They're so stupid. 98.5 Sports Hub.
You realize the season starts next week? Next week.
What?
Season starts a week from Thursday. In Tampa against the Rays. The season starts next week. And in fact,
29th, yeah.
Forgive me here for self-promotion. Baseball Reporters next Monday, 6 p.m. right here on 95 Sports.
Nice.
Back on the air next week. So baseball season starts next week, which means the Red Sox have a week of spring games left. A week. Craig Kimbrell just arrived in camp. Just got there. And again, had problems because his daughter needed heart surgery. I think she's 4 months old. So obviously you wish him the best there, but he doesn't feel ready to start the season to me. The Red Sox keep saying they are. He hasn't pitched in any games. How could he possibly be ready? So that's something to keep an eye on. Drew Pomeranz hasn't pitched in a game in 2 weeks, maybe three. I know he threw a simulated game, but does that really count? After that flexor strain in his forearm, he doesn't feel ready to me to start the year. Eduardo Rodriguez is not going to start the season. He's going to be on the disabled list. Steven Wright hasn't pitched in a game. He's telling people he thinks he can pitch at the start of the year, but who the hell knows? He doesn't feel like he's ready to go. Brian Johnson right now and Hector Velasquez are in the rotation to start the season. I don't feel great about the pitching staff. And it's supposed to be the strength of the team. Now, the good news is, positionally, it feels like they're in good shape. Everybody's healthy, no major injuries. Pedroia's obviously out, but you knew that one going in. So, all things considered in terms of the positional roster, fine. But the pitching staff does not feel ready to go.
Okay, forgive me if you just said this because I was looking something up.
No problem.
Is it sort of intentional? They're holding some of these guys back?
No, not some of them, yes, but so they held Sale back. He just pitched in a game last week for the first time. But Sale's deliberate. Price is deliberate.
No, but they want him to be.
Yes,
that's,
yes.
So that's not like a warning sign.
No,
that's
no, those guys are deliberate.
It.
Yeah, they are managing those guys differently. But this compounds it, too, from this standpoint. If they're managing it so that they don't lean on those guys early in the year, and they have injuries to Pomeranz, Eduardo Rodriguez, that's going to put extra strain on your bullpen early in the year. Their pitching staff is not ready to start the season. Now, I'm not telling you that I want Sale to come out and pitch 8 on opening day, because I don't. I'm just telling you that, but for some of them are circumstances beyond their control, extenuating circumstances. But their pitching staff is not in great shape. The good news is they're getting Tampa out of the beginning. Right now, to start the year, their staff's not in good shape.
Okay, there's your Red Sox minute. Add it to the list. We're going over everything here on a reentry Monday. It's a big one. Maz and I were gone for most of last week. Maz got in a Friday, but I'm going on 10 days here, so we're getting caught up on everything. Back to the phones. John in Brockton on the Pats. Hi, John.
Yes. Hello. I'd like to have a question answered that's been bothering me for a number of years. And it's in relationship also with all the players, why everybody can't believe they're all leaving. They're finally realizing that it's what they want, the money now. Why I'm saying this is I'd like to have answered for me, taking Brady, being the poster boy, all the discounts that he's been taking, unbelievable, when he's the best in the business that ever has been, taking those kind of discounts. Is there any doubt in your mind that when he retires that he's going to get every nickel back that he sacrificed and then probably some with a nice paper job from the Crafts?
Oh, well, I don't know if you have heard our, you know, some of the underhand comments here. Maybe he's already gotten taken care of, you know, in other places. I'm not worried about Brady and his money. I think, Maz, you make a good point, though. All these years, Brady took less. Other guys sort of followed suit. And it's just sort of, again, which I think has been largely a myth, because I still feel like they lose good players like everybody else. But the sort of the storyline that they all would take less and sort of subjugate, and that's how they were able to keep everyone, even though they never have been able to keep everybody. They never have, especially the last several years. Everyone, the good players go like they do everywhere else. But now all of a sudden, you have like loyal Bradyites like Amendola leaving over not huge money, and Brady himself not accepting or not apparently, and again, we'll play the sound from Bedard last week, saying he's given the team a hard time on restructuring his contract.
See, to me, those two things go hand in hand. And we started to talk about this a little bit, I think, before we both took off. Brady's cap hit this year is $22 million. $22 million. You know what it was last year?
14, I think.
14. So whenever they've had this in the past, it gets done. And I don't remember who wrote it here in the last couple of days, but typically end of February or sometime in there, right before the start of the league year, they get it done, the number goes down, so they have the money to spend in free agency. Why didn't it happen this year? Is Brady unwilling to play ball? And if that's true, then that absolutely inspires the other one to say, okay, Tom's done doing it, so am I. Because I think it all goes as Brady goes down there, and this again speaks to a little bit of that power struggle and Brady asserting himself a little bit more.
So let me tell you something. Again, on this one, I side with Belichick a little bit. You know, so what, finally these players are acting entitled? Do I blame the entitled players or the coach who's always been the same?
So to me, it all goes back to Brady. Now, Belichick, the mistake Belichick made, Mike, was letting Guerrero in there in the first place. Okay, that was a mistake. He never should have said yes. But then after that, when he wanted to kick him out, I got no issue with him doing that.
So Bill's an a-hole. I'm an a-hole from day one.
Yeah, Brady's a diva.
Now all of a sudden Brady can't handle it? And now all of a sudden the players can't handle it? I'm sorry, I'm not blaming the coach on that. He is what he is. And I actually like that part of his system. I think that part's real. The chain of command and the
almost military aspect of the way that he runs that
team.
Yeah,
like it,
but
you
Brady
know,
has reached a point here in these last 3 years, if not longer, that it's like, well, I'm on your level. Stop treating me like I'm not.
Oh, well, I'm not on Brady's side on that. You're not on his level. You're not. No, you're not. You're still a player, Tom.
Except that the owner sided with the quarterback.
That's a problem. Pete in Delaware, go.
Hey, guys. Hey, talk about mismanaging and capping bad signs. I go back to two moves. The Brandon Cooks move, we all know he's making over $8 million this year. That's money you could have had to put towards solar, or you could have drafted someone in the first round like Ryan Ramczyk. And the second one is the not taking less money. Look at Stephon Gilmore. I'm not saying he's a bad player, but he got a lot of money that New England's not used to doing. And you know what? If he's going to get that kind of money, why should anybody else who's already here?
So look, Pete, you're not going to hear me say the Pats have mismanaged their cap. I'm not telling you they mismanaged their cap. Just quit telling me everyone else does when they lose good players. Just stop. It's just a myth. If the Jets or the Ravens or the Broncos had lost the collection of players that the Patriots have the last couple years, if they had lost Amendola, Solder, Lewis, Butler, just add on Martellus Bennett, Chris Long, Jabal Sheer, Darrell Revis, Akeem Hicks, Jamie Collins, Logan Ryan, if the Jets or the Broncos had lost that collection of players, we would look at them and go, those idiots don't know how to work their cap. They're stupid. We don't do that here. You idiot Jets. You know, you'd look at the Broncos and go, oh, you're done now, Felger. And Mike Reese is over right about the cliff, the financial cliff that these teams have to face. It's just the same thing here. It's the same thing here as everywhere else. They don't have some sort of magic formula. They lose their good players like everywhere else. Just please stop with that preaching. That preaching I've got to hear about how smart they are with their money and how different they are than everybody else. They're not.
Especially on defense when you look at who they've replaced those players with. I mean, you go right down the line, you know, between, you know, Collins and Jones and Butler and, like, you Logan Ryan. You look at the guys they brought in defensively. Akeem Hicks, they let go. Like, and look at who they replaced him with. And now you know why their defense
sucks.
Okay,
but you know what, Maz? A lot of teams have the same problems. It's hard. It's hard to get one group of good players, lose them, and then just sort of replace them all in mass. It's hard. And it's why these other teams have all sort of gone up and come down. How come you haven't gone up and come down? It has nothing to do with the cap. Quit with that myth. What it is when you lose your players, what you're left with is the greatest singular coach in the history of the game and the greatest singular quarterback in the history of the game. And they sort of figure it out. So Bill out-coaches everyone on a weekly basis, and even when he doesn't, he just hands the ball to Brady with 4 minutes left, and he goes and wins it.
Yeah, I'm just telling you that Brady can make up for the shortage of talent on offense more than not. But on defense, he can't, and those are the years where they don't win the Super Bowl.
Right.
Where they get there and they lose.
But they still get to 12 wins because Brady puts up 38 when he needs
exactly. But then all of a sudden, they go up against a team like Philadelphia that's got weapons, and they can't cover them, and now they lose the game. Or they go to the Giants in 2011, and the Giants hold the ball for 37 minutes and change in that game, and they can't get off the field, or they can't get a stop in 07 with David Tyree making a circus catch and Ellis Hobbs covering Plaxico one-on-one. Because ultimately, eventually, there's a drain on the other side and they're not prepared to handle it.
Just like everybody
exactly.
else. Just like everybody else. Just like everybody else. The cap thing here and their money manager, it's a myth. It's a myth that's been sold to you. And I don't know if you still buy it. The Brady and Belichick thing is damn real. It's still real. And you're still left with them, and so you're still going to be great. You're still going to be great. But don't tell me, like, if they had kept Garoppolo, then I would tip my cap and say, they got it figured out, no one else does. They were able to manage something that no one else has been able to do, and it's all been worth it because you were able to keep that next guy. But that didn't even happen. So what are we left with? Long commercial-free segment is next.
Michael Felger, Tony Maserati, Felger and Maz. You're listening to Felger.
Doesn't always have to be ha-ha-hee-hee.
Oh, love it.
98.5, the Sports Hub.
Tom still doesn't have his contract extension. Now, I've heard rumblings that is because Brady's not in a hurry to help out the team. You know, I talked about how there was supposed to be a meeting, or at least they were trying to put a meeting together around the time of the Dolphins away game. It didn't happen. You know, and now with this Facebook video, it looks like things still haven't happened. And, talking to somebody who knows what was going on with the production of this. The Giselle quote and the Tom quote at the end, there was no accident that it was set up that way.
What are we doing this for? You know? What are we doing this for? Who are we doing this for? Why are we doing this? You gotta have answers to those questions. And they have to be with a lot of conviction. You know, when you lose your conviction, then you probably should be doing something else.
These last 2 years have been very challenging for him in so many ways. And I think he just want, you know, he tells me, I love it so much, and I just want to go to work and feel appreciated and have fun.
Yeah. Holy crap, that's good eating, guys. Damn.
You missed a lot.
Had a good vacation. I missed that. I'm sorry I wasn't here for that. What day was that?
Bedard was in on Wednesday. The Tom versus Time dropped on Monday.
Monday, yeah, dropped on Monday morning.
Oh, tasty little drama there, guys. Ooh, that's good. That's good. So Bedard says Brady's given him a hard time on the contract this year, and that who he spoke to on the Tom V. Time episode 6, the reworked one after the loss, the last two comments from Brady and Giselle were no accident. And you heard him there. Murray put that together. Excellent. Where Brady says, you know, it's got to matter to you. And you got to ask yourself why you're doing this. And Giselle says you want to have fun and be appreciated. I'm like, oh, wow. And then Beatle made, what a great point Beatle made at the end of the midday show. Is the first episode of Tom V. Time, that's the one where Brady says, I've given up my life. Will you? So in episode one, he's telling you, I have no family life. I've given up my life because this is what it's all about. And then he gets to episode six and he says, I don't know, you got to really think about what this is all about.
Just a mere few months later.
Yeah, a few months later, it's like, you know, there's a lot of family time involved here. It's like, by the end of episode six, he's changed his tune entirely. So, like, that's another little indication of what's going on down there.
You also missed my crazy conspiracy theory about not wanting to work with the team. He'd be willing to restructure this deal and allow some money to be had for Rob Gronkowski.
Oh.
So Gronk still in the wind here. If you want Gronk back in the fold, obviously Tom does, his best weapon, his security blanket. Okay, I'll work with you, team. But that money has to be allocated to Gronk. I would think that the Crafts would want to do that because they don't want to lose one of their best assets and someone who puts asses in seats, markability, there, that matters too. Think Bill would be into that? So now Tom and Gronk can essentially have a coup.
And basically determine payroll.
Yes.
To sort of set payroll.
No, it is. It's so true, though. Are you willing to give up your life? Because I'm ready to give up mine.
And then he gets to episode six, and he's like, you got to think about what this is all about.
Yeah, now that I think of it, I don't know if I want to do this anymore. It's true. It's true. One of the great double reverses of all time. Holy crap. It is. It's comical. Week one. I'm ready to give up my life for you. Week six. I don't know if I want to do this anymore.
And the wife is saying he wants to go to where he's really has fun and is appreciated. And Gronk, I did see Gronk with that tweet to Danny Mandola on the way out the door. Go, you know, keep lit, bro, whatever. You know, it's about having...
Be free. And be happy.
Fun. Yes, in all caps, we read into that, of course. Tell me you read into that.
Oh, absolutely. And Brady commented on it, too, a short time after it posted, saying, like, right on, Gronk, with three clapping emojis, like, emancipate yourself from the chains of Bill Belichick. Be free, Danny. Enjoy Miami. I'm telling you, something could be in play here, and that Gronk, still out in the wind here, not in the fold, need him back. Brady says to the team, I ain't working with you, but I will if you allocate some of the money that's available now that I rework my deal for Gronk. He needs to be making top wide receiver money. Kraft say, okay, yeah, we need him. You know, you need him, Tom. You want him, whatever you get. Meanwhile, Bill's saying, son of a bitch, I didn't agree to this. Who runs the team? I thought I ran the team. As it is, the quarterback is already bigger than the team. Now the tight end is.
But I'll tell you what.
I'm out. Bye.
But Amendola and Solder being shown the door tells you Brady's still, you know, he ain't calling all the shots.
See,
those
but
are two guys. I mean, look.
See, but I don't feel like they were shown the door. I feel like they left. That to me, that's one of the big differences this offseason. I always felt like the other ones we knew were coming for sure.
Yeah.
And you felt differently about Solder than I did, but they needed Solder. They wanted to keep Solder. They'd offered him, what, $12 million a year? Yeah, 12 and a half?
Greg said he had talked to someone that said they offered him $12 million.
Wow.
I mean, so they went to they extended themselves a little for Solder. And Amendola, how many pay cuts has he taken? And it felt to me more like these guys saying, you know what, I'm done here. I'm done. And then Brady and Gronk go to the Instagram page and start cheering Amendola like he's the one who flew over the cuckoo's nest. Hey, go, you go, Danny. Go, boy. Get out of here. Go. Like he's chief running across the field getting out of the asylum.
Oh, man. I know drama. That rejoin. Just play that again, Jimmy, if you don't mind. Because even the music you put underneath there, Murray, that's high-quality drama right there.
Depeche Mode, Barrel of a Gun.
Whatever.
Tom still doesn't have his contract extension. Now, I've heard rumblings that is because Brady's not in a hurry to help out the team. You know, I talked about how there was supposed to be a meeting, or at least they were trying to put a meeting together around the time of the Dolphins away game. It didn't happen. You know, and now with this Facebook video, it looks like things still haven't happened. And, talking to somebody who knows what was going on with the production of this, the Giselle quote and the Tom quote at the end, there was no accident that it was set up that way.
What are we doing this for? You know, what are we doing this for? Who are we doing this for? Why are we doing this? You got to have answers to those questions. And they have to be with a lot of conviction. You know, when you lose your conviction, then you probably should be doing something else.
These last 2 years have been very challenging for for him in so many ways. And I think he just want, you know, he tells me I love it so much and I just want to go to work and feel appreciated and have fun.
You know, I juxtaposed what Brady was saying at the end of that episode to what he was saying before Super Bowl 49 to the teammates, pumping them up. It's about honor. It's about respect. Just a mere few years ago, this is what we play for. More trophies. More, more, more. That 60 Minutes interview years ago. Hey, Tom, what's your favorite championship? The next one. Oh, the best Pats porn you could possibly hear. Now? Yeah, I don't know how into it I am anymore.
When you lose your conviction, you should do something else. Which, you know, is fine if then the next, I mean, you didn't edit anything out there. The next sentence should be, and I'm still 1,000% committed and my conviction is still there. He didn't really answer the first part of the clause, did he? Or did
no.
he? Like, I mean, again, no. unless you played around with the sound.
No.
When you lose your conviction, you should do something else.
No, as Jimmy Stewart said, when you watch this thing, you watch it for the first time, Jimmy thought, right, you thought he was going to end it with, and I retire.
And like, I retire. I'm done. I'm Finn.
I'll tell you what, I think Giselle's full of crap, too. Her comment there about, you know, the last couple of years, bullcrap. A year ago, he's sitting with Peter King telling everybody he had all the answers to the test and he wanted to play till 45. A year later? I don't know. We'll see. I'm not really into it anymore. What a crock!
Okay.
It's a big commitment. Sitting here laying here 3 days after the year, getting my Achilles worked on my thumb. And you go, what are we doing this for? You know? What are we doing this for? Who are we doing this for? Why are we doing this? You got to have answers to those questions. And they have to be with a lot of conviction. You know, when you lose your conviction, then you probably should be doing something else.
Holy crap. I got to start taking a different week of vacation. If this stuff's going to go on, that's too good. What are we doing this for? Well, he's getting the treatment before going into the Super Bowl, the AFC Championship game. And he's like, well, what are we doing this for? Like, what? Out of nowhere? What? What are we doing that you're questioning? What?
You know, what are we doing this for? Who are we doing this for? Why are we doing this? You got to have answers to those questions. And they have to be with a lot of conviction.
So now he's asking.
You know, when you lose your conviction, then you probably should be doing something else.
All of a sudden, he's asking these questions? What happened to the, I've got all the answers, I'm playing to 45?
I used to be willing to give up my life, but I'm not anymore.
Like, that sounds like my life's work was for nothing.
So yeah. The only question I would have, like, is there any chance he's talking about someone else?
What do you mean by that?
Gronk. Belichick. Maybe he feels Belichick's not as into it. You know?
No, because he says, when I'm getting there, my Achilles worked on 3 days after, and they're getting my thumb he's talking about himself.
So I don't believe that. I'm just throwing it out there. Because
so,
I think he's talking about himself.
Okay, Reentry Monday, right to you. After Murray's update, don't go anywhere.
Stay tuned for more Felger and Mass on 98.5, The Sports Hub.